Welcome to the Barth Calderone Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for jumping on. This is Paul Hitchcock with the asset protection, estate planning, and business planning firm, Barth Calderone. Really excited to have my colleague and top attorney, Brent Honay, here. Brent, welcome.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Yeah, great. And I just want to say that really honored to be presenting to the San Francisco Apartment Association. We are members of SFAA. I'm a local guy in the area. I live in Marin County. Been up here in the Bay Area for many years. We have a nice footprint here in the Bay, and love giving education out anywhere we can. And so what we're going to talk about today, we're going to jump into this, how to keep property in the family for multiple generations. This is a big deal. And Brent is one of our top speakers at the firm and is in high demand across the country for talks just like this. And you also are going to get an opportunity, I want to say before we jump into this, to get one-on-one with Brent for a complimentary planning assessment with anything that comes up here, or you have other questions related to asset protection, estate planning, and your property, please get one-on-one with us. I'm going to share a slide here as we go forward. And Brent, let's jump in.
Sounds good. So thank you, Paul. So I know today we really want to focus on legacy planning. And I think it's something that all of the folks who view this will have in common, as it is with many of the clients that we meet with, which is, you know, I'm building this empire of real estate, you know, in this case. How do I make sure that what I've taken the time and effort and, you know, worked my butt off to grow, how do I make sure that that legacy lives on generations after me, and it doesn't just get squandered or lost due to lawsuit or taxes and such? And so there's a way to do that. We do that quite a bit for folks and help them understand what options are available. So we're going to get into that.
Because you see that a lot. I mean, obviously you and I talk a lot offline, but you see a lot of times property is lost, right? I mean, it's a thing.
Oh, for sure. And you know, as a firm that where our focus is asset protection, you know, it's a really sad thing to watch, because you can watch, you know, how painstaking it is to build what you have, and then to watch it just in a blink of an eye be gone because there's not a proper structure in place to make sure that if that lawsuit rolls up one day, we don't just lose everything. Right. But there's a number of other things that we're going to get into too, that are ways that, you know, that our kids or our grandkids and so forth will blow what we've built.
Yeah. Well, let's start. So what's the first kind of point number one we want to dive into here when it comes to this topic?
You know, I'd say we first want to understand, you know, what are we trying to do here, right? Are we building this? You know, we're generally building this for us when we're, you know, we've got this portfolio of real estate. The first question that's going to come up is this important to us? You know, and sometimes we talk to clients and the answer to that is no, we don't care what happens after us, and that's okay. But for those folks who say that it is, we got to understand, what are the enemies here? What are the things that are going to tear this thing apart after we're gone? And so those top areas, you know, that we see, you know, ruining what you've built would be things like unintended lawsuits that roll up. I'd say so. Number one category is lawsuits. Number two category would be, I don't know a nice way to say it, but just, you know, children or grandchildren who don't take the same, you know, care in terms of keeping your assets protected and in good order and such to pass this on to the next generation. So the children effect, maybe we'll call it. And then the third one being, you know, taxes become just so out of control, we can't keep the properties. Those would be some big things to try to protect against. So,
and it's interesting as we'll get into the asset protection part here in a second, but it's interesting because, you know, knowing the landscape in the Bay Area, property ownership, you know, there's a lot of legacy property in the Bay Area, you know, families, that have owned property for a long time, or kids who are inheriting property for the first time. And in many cases, it's a retirement plan. You know, obviously the properties are cash flowing. These are people who do not have 401ks or IRAs, those traditional sort of retirement accounts. Property's it. And so it really is important because it's providing a lifestyle and can live on for generations. And so on the asset protection side, maybe we go into that a bit and talk about what, you know, why that's important on the unforeseen liability lawsuit side, because of all the lawsuits that are going on and many of those toward landlords. We want to explore that a bit.
Yep, absolutely. And I'd say, you know, just to kind of set the stage here on that side of it, it's, you know, the first generation here, you know, that's the saying, the first generation grows it, the second generation spends it, the third generation blows it, right? That's what we're familiar with. I'm looking at a site right now, Advisor's Edge, where they're stating that less than 10% of family wealth, you know, not just specifically talking about real estate, but just family wealth in general, survives the transition to the third generation. So the second generation just gets rid of it. And so, so let's talk about lawsuit, right? And the starting point being, let's build a strong foundation. And so, you know, if the listeners haven't heard this from us before, for investment real estate, we strongly advise, you know, building structures to protect it in generation one, right? If we're gonna build this ourselves, let's not just leave these entities, you know, these pieces of real estate that we have to the vulnerability of someone who sues us to be able to take it from us. Let's not hold things in our name or in our family revocable trust name, which doesn't protect anything, but let's create a structure, right? Let's start with the idea that we want properly structured LLCs. And we can spend a whole hour talking about what that means in a different session, but let's create LLCs to protect things. And if we want to go further than that, let's create an asset protection trust to hold those LLCs separate from each other, to really protect things for us. Because when we're building our wealth ourselves, we are limited to the things we can do. We can't just create, you know, typically a trust that is going to protect everything, you know, for ourselves that's revocable. We can't do that. But we can do that for our kids. And so we start with the idea that we want LLCs and other entities to protect things. And then we look at, what do we do when we pass away? And I think that's the big issue for today, is what does our trust say, right? First off, do we have a trust that says, when I pass, my kids are going to inherit what I have, right? And that's not always the case, but that's typically what clients want, is they want their kids to inherit what they've built and have that live on. And so when I'm reviewing trusts, when anybody at our firm is reviewing trusts, we're always looking for, you know, what does the trust say is going to happen after these folks are gone? Is it a typical trust that's out there? You know, I'd say 70-80% of the trusts we review are either giving things outright to the kids, just saying, hey, when we pass, you just inherit your share from us outright and it transfers into your name. In other words, there's no protection to that. Or there's a stage distribution where as the kids get older, they get a little bit more of a percentage. Call it, you know, 33% will be year one, then another third in year, you know, 5 years down the road. And then the final third happens, you know, 5 years after that. But in either case, there's no protection there once that time frame has passed. You know, if somebody sues them, that money can be gone. So what do we do about that?
Yeah, and just a quick question, Brett, because you were saying, just a quick recap, is that people who have their property in their own name or in their living trust, the living trust is not, not an asset protection tool. And so that's your point, is that people make that mistake all the time. Oh, it's in my trust, it's protected. It's not. That does other things. And so you're getting into the different type of a trust you can set up in order to have the asset protection component of it.
For sure. And so, you know, I'd say if you're listening to this and you go, well, what kind of a trust do I have? The first thing I do is take a look at it. If it's a trust that you set up yourself, it's likely to be a revocable family trust, or I might say revocable living trust. Because it's revocable, because it's changeable, because it needs to change during your lifetime, you're limited to that. But understand that because it's set up as a revocable trust, and by the nature of the way it's set up, it doesn't protect anything. Right. And so when we're creating our trust that's revocable, in everybody's trust, it says, you know, there's a disposition section that should say, hey, when I die, here's where everything goes next. And then more importantly, when I die, here's how each of these people are going to inherit from me, right? And so what we're in the business of doing is creating trust that lasts generationally, right? So that when things go to our kids, money doesn't just go into their name so that they can, you know, do what they want with it. And if they get sued, too bad. If they get divorced, potentially they lose half of it. Money goes into a trust where the trust is is irrevocable to them. In other words, the trust we have today lives on. And something really important happens when we pass, in that the trust that's revocable to us becomes irrevocable to our kids. And by the nature of setting that up properly, if we set that up in a fashion where that trust just is for the benefit of our kids, and maybe, and this is something that we're gonna have to get into, maybe our kids are the trustees in charge of their own trust, or maybe they're not, but by designing it in that fashion to where the money never really comes out of trust, we're better protecting that property, so that if a lawsuit rolls up on those kids and we're held in now a trust that's irrevocable for their benefit, we've preserved that property. If a lawsuit comes up, we won't just lose it.
Yeah, so that's a great concept, because this is a trust, obviously, the parents set up while they're alive of sound mind and all that, and then rolls into this trust for the kids, which you say it protects them from a lot of things, like from a divorce, right? If the kid gets divorced and there's a fight for assets, it guards against that. Maybe they're in a risky business. I've heard you talk about that before, where they get sued, or even car accidents and stuff. That legacy property is guarded.
Exactly. And that's the issue. It's you know, lawsuits are a big one, right? And that's how we see a lot of wealth lost. So if we can just guard against that, in fact, if I were to ask, you know, most folks that are building their wealth here in California through real estate, you know, what do they hope to happen when they're gone for their kids? What do they want to see happen? They generally would tell me they don't want to see, you know, what they've built so hard to be lost, you know, from a lawsuit perspective. But they're even more excited about the idea that they don't want to see, you know, half of what they've worked off on walk away with a divorcing spouse and now go to a whole brand new family that they don't even know. Right.
Right.
And what they really are shocked to find out is that the majority of trusts that are out there don't do a good job of doing that. Right. So when I say that the trust is going to go to my kids, right. And let's say, so my daughter, Emma, right. My daughter, Emma, you know, inherits from me, and then she will get to the age where she's able to take care of, you know, things on her own. If I set that trust up in a way, like most people do, where at some point that asset, now this piece of, you know, rental real estate is now owned directly by Emma, and then Emma marries somebody, it's very tempting for her at some point, for a variety of reasons, to add her spouse onto that trust. And in so doing, she may not be thinking this way, or not, you know, not intending it to happen.
Right.
But it can be, you know, we basically move from the column of separate property to community property at that point. And if that somebody that she's married to decides, you know what, I'm out of here, Emma, and I want not only half of what we have together, but half of what your parents left you, she's opened the door to that. So half can leave with her.
Can't you just forbid your daughter to get married?
That would be nice. But yeah, unfortunately, that's not the way it works. But
it doesn't work.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of things that happen. And so as in talking with people, there's a lot of challenges that come up. You know, obviously, as lawyers, we love the idea of creating premarital agreements. We think it's important. We think it's healthy. We know that the rate of divorce, you know, is very high. And in California, it's higher than most, right? So if we know that's a big possibility, let's do something to head that off. If that's going to happen, to where money stays generationally, it goes to our kids and it goes to our grandkids. It doesn't have an opportunity to leave that trust to jump out to, you know, another family. And this is a great way to do that.
Yeah. No, so the trust planning is critical. And when you do that, Brent, I just have a question for that. And I want to get back to the legal entity structure in a second. But on the trust, so you set up this trust, then the property flows to this trust, irrevocable trust. The kids or child is a beneficiary. Who's the trustee? Like controlling stuff. I've heard before you can have like one child and a sibling can be the trustee. And then, you know, there's 100% trust between the two and, you know, money can flow back and forth. Like how do you set that up?
Yeah, great segue here into kind of the next point of why creating a trust properly is really important is that, you know, a lot of wealth is lost, you know, not from these outside forces at all, not from a divorcing spouse or from a lawsuit, but from our own kids, right? Just making poor decisions and just blowing it. And so if that's the case, if we have kids and we feel like, hey, they're not ready yet, they're young, right? Or maybe they're not young, but we just know that if they're in charge of things, they're going to blow it. But we have other people that we would consider to be very, you know, wise in terms of managing assets and really understand what we're doing. You know, that sort of thing. They're very good people that we can put into the, what we call the successor trustee spot of that trust. And that's really, really important to understand is that, you know, if we feel like our kids may not make the best decisions, but we want them to still benefit, you know, economically from what we have, we put somebody else, we put a third party in as the trustee. And we can do that in a number of ways. We can do that as, you know, a full-on different third party. Oftentimes we're asked to be the trustee and we're happy to do that, right? CPAs are good folks to be trustees. And in both those cases, you're dealing with people that although they're charging the family money for their time, they are, you know, they have a fiduciary duty to your child at that right. point, you know, or your grandkids down the road to make sure that that they're cared for properly based on the terms of the trust. And that they, if we blow it, guess what? We get sued and lose our livelihood. We can lose our bar license or we can lose our CPA, you know, certification. And so very good choices. And so sometimes people will say, I don't know if I want my kid completely out of the mix there, in which case you can partner them up or pair up your child with a third party. Doesn't have to be a professional. It can be other siblings. It can be other people, but these just need to be people that you trust. And that's why it's important to talk to lawyers who do this day in and day out, to talk through all the options, talk about what your family looks like, talk about what's possible in the family, and talk that. And then on that same topic before we get off of it, another party that's important to talk about is the trust protector. We've talked about that before, right? And the trust protector is extremely important for trusts like this when we're creating a legacy trust, because we can only see so far, right? We can see, you know, hey, if we pass, our kids are going to inherit. We may or may not have grandkids in the picture yet, but we can't see out that far generationally. And so we can pre-pick the trustees that we want and create a lineup. You know, think of it like if it's a baseball game, these are people on the bench waiting to go into the game in the order that you pick them. But we can only build that bench so far with the people we have, because at some point these folks will have gotten old, have died off and such. So it's important to create something called a trust protector for a trust like this. That is part of the trust. It's a different player within the trust. That trust protector is often your lawyer or your law firm, where you've got people that understand how these trusts work, who can, depending upon what's needed, they can replace a trustee with a new trustee. And they're always looking to protect the family in whatever situation is going on. So a trust protector is a really important concept that a lot of folks don't have in their trust, and they really should.
Yeah, no, interesting. Very interesting. Well, that's great. Let's get back to the legal entity on setting that up. Don't want to own it in your own name. Don't want to own it, you know, in your living trust. Limited liability company. Now, obviously, you know, this is out there. People have heard about this. Let's dive in a little bit to that, Brent, and, you know, how that works and what you got to look out for.
Yeah. So if we're just creating, you know, we've got our properties already, or we're in the process of investigating, we're saying, hey, we're going to go into this and build our wealth through real estate. We have already discussed, and we know that we shouldn't hold title to these properties in our own name. We shouldn't hold title on these in revocable trust, because we're totally subject to lawsuit, whether they're lawsuits that happen inside the property or, you know, lawsuits that happen to us outside the property and then where our property is lost. Either way, we don't want that. So we go down the road of, you know, creating an entity. And I'd say a great entity to start with, as you're pointing out here, would be a limited liability company. And we start with the idea that not all limited liability companies are created equal. So right. If you say, hey, I want to go the cheapest way I possibly can, I'm going to go to LegalZoom or some other, you know, service and just create a little cheapy LLC and not really ask a lot of questions and feel like I'm okay. Well, guess what? If you create a California LLC and it's, you know, one person owning it, or maybe husband and wife in a community property state, we have this thing called a single member LLC. And that's not very strong when we look at things like hey, what happens if we get in a really nasty situation one day? Can someone actually ask the judge to pierce that thing and come take my assets inside of it anyway? Can they do that? And the court history in California is not very favorable on that one. So a California LLC is not really your best answer for a single member LLC. It would make a lot more sense to borrow the law from other states that are more protective of you. Think states like Nevada, think states like Wyoming, where it's very cheap and easy to establish an LLC. If your property is in California, you still need to, you know, register that LLC in California to have it valid and have it active here. But the law that you want to govern any kind of a future lawsuit that you're going to argue for is another state, Wyoming in this case, that's more protective of a single member LLC.
Wow, very, very interesting. So even though your property is in California, you can get the laws of another state that's favorable. Brent, is it if the property's in California, does it matter where you live? What if you don't live in California? The property's in California, is that the deciding factor?
So if the property's in California, you need to register in California. If you reside in California, you need to register in California. And that's really the big issue. That's the thing where people go, do I really need to do this? Because I know I want to protect things, but California is going to charge me $800 to right. do this. I have to do it. And the answer is yes. If you've got property that's in California, you got to register it here.
Whether you live here or not.
Correct. And if you live here, you know, the franchise tax board status on this is wherever your LLC is at, you should be registering that thing in California and paying your $800. And really that's what it's about, is they want the $800. And so.
Right. Yeah.
But that's a small price to pay when you're saying, hey, I want to set up something properly. We want those out of state, you know, arguments. Everything that we do, we want settlement value for that. We want to create something that's difficult for somebody to get at and get at us. And so we go out of state. And to the degree we want to beef up the protection even more, maybe we don't just have, you know, one person as the owner of that LLC. Maybe we have another trust set up, a trust for the benefit of our kids now at this point, that's an irrevocable trust. They can hold 1, 2, 3% of that property. Now we have a multi-member LLC, which is even more effective, which is great. Now we've solved the California problem and we're also in another state, which is good. So there's just ways to do these things correctly in ways that seem right or feel good, but push come to shove, you know, may not be so great if they're put to the test.
Yeah, because the setting up the LLC, it's almost like earthquake insurance on your house. You know, if you don't have earthquake insurance or you didn't set it up properly and your house, you know, nothing ever happens, who cares, right? You didn't need it. It's when something happens, people go, oh, gosh, but my insurance is there. Kind of LLC seems like it's the same way, you know. If you set up a lousy one or don't have one, it's when something happens, life throws you a curveball and it's too late, correct?
It is. It's like, I think it was Warren Buffett who was saying, we find out who's, you know, wearing pants at the beach when the tide rolls back out. You know, it's everybody feels good when everything's fine. But when the problem happens, it's a matter of, you know, is it going to be, you know, a house built on rock or on sand here? And so it's really important to work with lawyers who do asset protection and build the structures properly. And then I'd say go a step further. And if you're dealing with multiple properties, that's the next question is,
yeah,
can I just bundle everything into one LLC and keep it cheap and easy and administratively, you know, no big deal. And our recommendation to you would be, no, don't do that. You're building big. You're going big here, right? You're building multiple, you know, streams of revenue from these different properties. Don't put them in the same box, because if you do that, although you are protecting your properties inside the box from things on the outside that happen, maybe car wreck or, you know, your kids crash the car and hurt people or whatever happens, what you've just done is, if I have a property inside the box, somebody can run the table and take all my properties inside of there still. So it's kind of that being, you know, penny foolish kind of a situation.
Yeah. And it's funny because we had a case, just as an example, you know, that came into the firm. There was a mold case in Noe Valley, which is a hamlet in the Bay Area everyone knows about. And it was a long-term tenant and daughter complained about mold, and there was mold. Landlord cleaned it up. She got an attorney. They sued, and the landlord fought it, thinking this is ridiculous. I cleaned it up. And it was $1.8 million the landlord had to pay, which was attorney's fees and money to the tenant, didn't have asset protection, lost the property. And that, you know, and that would be without the LLC, full net worth exposed, right? And even if he had multiple properties in one LLC with that mold claim, it would impact everything.
You got it. You got it. And so the key is to do things right before there's a problem and to have these conversations, you know, to have these conversations with us, it's free to talk, to just go through this process and to discuss, you know, here's what you have. Here's what's recommended. To have that complimentary consultation makes a lot of sense. Because there's not a do-over. Once something's in play and something's going on, we can't go back in time and go, I know there's mold there. Let's create the LLC now. It doesn't work so well.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's no time like the present on doing that. And it's just super important. So yeah, step one is create that LLC or those LLCs to separate things from each other. And then step two is how do we hold ownership in those LLCs, right? Who's the owners of that? And so that's when we're reviewing LLCs for people now, when they've gone and say, you know, a lot of folks will say, hey, I've got LLCs. I created them on my own. Can you guys just look at them? And we're happy to look at them and tell you what you have going on. But oftentimes we find that, you know, people will say, yeah, I've got a trust over here and I've got all my LLCs over here and they're all good. And they never connected the dots. In other words, the ownership of your LLCs should be you, but it should be you assigning your ownership interest in that LLC to your family trust.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The paper in there that's attached to your membership certificate that says, yep, our trust owns the ownership or the equity piece of this. And so that if we die, we're not going to probate court. My trust says what to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Brent, this question comes up a lot is when you're transacting business in your property, let's say you're buying the property, and you want to sell it and buy something else. Can you do that? And can the property be encumbered in an LLC?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. And the answer is yes, you can. I mean, for the 1031 exchange rules, you know, really it's about maintaining that proportional ownership the same, you know, in the existing property as the new property. So if I've got an LLC and the ownership percentages are what they are, and I do that 1031 exchange into a new property in that LLC, and we haven't changed the proportional ownership, it's all good.
Okay.
As far as encumbering and lending, that's becoming more of an issue than it was in the past. And that, you know, when interest rates are really low, nobody really cares too much about it, but the question still comes up. And the question is my lender going to get, you know, in a twist about an LLC owning this property? From our perspective, you know, when we're talking to lenders about, you know, that say, hey, this isn't cool. You've transferred ownership in this property to an LLC now, is pointing out to them that their claim to the property isn't changed, is not modified. They still have the ability to, you know, to take the property if their, you know, client isn't making payments, but they're actually in a better position now in that the client is more protected, or, you know, the person who is the borrower is now better protected against the lawsuit should that roll up on them, and helping everybody understand that. So it is doable. We do it all the time. We work with lenders, and the key is if a lender doesn't like what's going on, work with a law firm that will help you to manage through that so that the lender, you know, so it's not a scary situation, so that the lender understands what's happening and will, you know, understand what you're doing.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. Once you set up the LLC, you can have multiple owners of an LLC, right? Put your kid on there, spouse, you know, that's no problem.
No problem at all. And so that kind of brings us a little bit into, you know, the property tax issue. You remember we talked about that we got lawsuits that we're worried about. We've got, you know, maybe kind of idiot kids we're worried about and such blowing it. And then we've got taxes, you know, as an issue. And in California, it's even more challenging because we have this Proposition 19 that passed where it's more difficult for us to now transfer these properties that are appreciating in value over time to our kids and letting them step into our shoes to inherit what we had and not pay as much taxes. So we've got some workarounds for that to help preserve the legacy, you know, while we're at it. And that's a big deal. And that's generally done through the means of your existing LLC, where you're gifting some of these things early. Right, you're gifting some of your ownership early to your kids, if that's where it's going to go anyway,
right,
into special types of trusts while you're still here. And there are there are ways to do that. You know, one of the ways that we do that is something called the Dell exception. I don't know how much we want to go into detail on that one today, but there are ways, there are workaround ways to try to keep the assets in the family, but not have the property, you know, taxes go skyrocketing when we die.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the tax, I mean, as you get into Prop 19, is that one of the issues you talk about?
It is. It's something that comes up for everybody because the idea is, well, first there's a question, right? The question is going to be to the client, is this something that matters to us? In other words, what do we anticipate happening or what do we think is going to happen when we pass? Are the properties that we have, if we've built a portfolio of them, do we want the kids to keep generation two to keep them, right? Right. Or do we think it's likely that the kids are going to sell them and do something else? They don't want anything to do with this, right? And so it's just going to be sold. And if the answer is, oh, they're just, you know, Brent, they're just going to sell these properties and do something else. They all live in different places. They don't want to keep these things and such, which, you know, is happens a fair amount of the time. Then it's a moot point. We don't care about the property taxes because it's not going to apply to the kids. What we do care about is we want to make sure that the, you know, the capital gains step up happens so that they don't get hit with huge capital gains when they go to sell these properties, you know, down the road. So it's, we've got to be mindful of not only the property tax issue, but the capital gains tax issue. And then a third tax, the estate tax, which is that tax that a lot of us forget about. But if we are, you know, successful enough and wealthy enough, we get hit one more time as a family when we pass away. It's kind of that tax that's the one that hits you at the very end. It's the two things are certain in life tax, right? Death and taxes, right. And then tax you one more time on the way out. So we've got to look at all of that when we do an analysis. And so for most clients that are looking to build generational wealth, it starts with an analysis with us so that we're looking at all of those things. And every client's different. They all have different motivations. They have different things they're trying to do. But for those folks that are trying to build a legacy, keeping the property taxes lower is an extremely important idea, but everybody needs to be on the same page with that so that we don't run one way where we think, you know, we're going to go this way and then the kids totally unwind it down the road.
Yeah, no, that's a great comment. And it gets into how do you work the assessment for somebody? So we have a complimentary assessment. I'm going to show people. Actually, let me share that screen now. So I want to make sure I get this in front of people. And Brent, can you see this QR code up there?
I do.
Yeah. So I want to let everybody know that if you take a snapshot of this with your cell phone, you get to sign up to get one-on-one with Brent. And we all use the QR code. So input your name there. Look for the email to get on Brent's calendar. And Brent, could you talk about what this, how the assessment works? 100% complimentary. How does it work? We Zoom it. What happens?
So normally, you know, it's a Zoom session, but it's really up to, you know, the client. So my day typically is in meetings with clients. And if they're new, it's what we call a complimentary consultation. The vast majority of people these days prefer to do that by Zoom, right? It's easy. They don't have to go anywhere. They don't have to come to our office. We just talk just like we're doing now. But we can do this by phone. Some people are old school and you know, and in many cases want to meet. And I like to meet people face to face. I think that's the best way if it's possible. Can be in any of those formats we want, but we ask for a little bit of information up front. So we know, and I'm not spending a whole lot of time playing, you know, where are all your assets and what do you have going on? We've got an organizer filled out. So we know, at least initially what that person has, what they've done so far to protect themselves. Do they have a trust? Do they not? Do they want us to review it? All those sorts of things we know going into it. And then we talk. And it's really a meeting between me and the clients for the clients to figure out, you know, do we need help here? And if we do, is this law firm a good place to do that? Is Brent a good guy to be our person? Because what we're talking about doing is building a relationship that we hope to be a lifelong relationship. We don't want transactional business. We want to build relationships with folks that are building their wealth. They're trying to protect it. They're trying to, you know, take care of it. And they want to work with professionals to do that. So in that meeting, we're just figuring out what is it that they're trying to accomplish. And we're pointing out, you know, what are those assets that are vulnerable? What are not vulnerable and why? And at a really high level, figuring out what's some basic strategies we could do to spend, you know, not a lot of money, but do a lot of good and protect things while we can. And what generally comes out of that meeting is, you know, if the client's interested in moving forward is a retainer. A retainer is just a proposal from a law firm that outlines what we recommend to do next. And depending upon the situation, it might be that we want to do an analysis, right? We want to really find out about everything. It's kind of like the equivalent of going to the doctor for that full body scan where they're checking out everything, right? Just you may be in for one thing, but they're going to check out everything on you because they don't want to miss anything. And that's a great way to start. Other folks are just really targeted and they're just looking at, hey, I've got this property in Arizona. I've seen the video. I don't want to get hurt with this. What's the best way for me to cheaply fix it and get it protected, that kind of thing. So we go through all of that. It's a free meeting and then clients decide where they want to go next.
Yeah. Highly interactive. I love that. And fantastic. And again, I'm going to share this. If you want to get one-on-one with Brent, this is the QR code. Take a snapshot of that with your camera and you'll fill out a form. It'll take you just really a few seconds and then you'll get signed up for that. And Brent, I want to mention everybody too, that sort of as a bonus here, what we're doing is Brent and I got together and filmed some other short videos related to these topics that isolate some details. And so we're tagging on some of those videos at the end of this discussion right here. And be sure and watch those too. They drill down on some details. And I want to say, Brent, this is fantastic information. Anything you want to say, parting words for anybody?
I just say, hopefully the time is well spent. You feel like you got a little something out of the video. And if you want to take action, you know, like I said somewhere, you know, prior here, there's no do-overs with this. It's really important to, if any of what we've talked about, you know, triggers or stirs something up inside you, like, this is something I should find out more about. By all means, check it out. You know, we're here to offer information, to provide education and help protect, you know, protect your family and your wealth. If you don't have a trust, you know, it's a good time to talk about it. If you do have a trust and you want us to review it, because you're just not sure if it's got those protective provisions in there, it's a free review for me to review it, right? And tell you what I see. So happy to do that complimentary and help you out if you need it.
Great. Thanks, Brent. Thank you, SFAA, for having us. And we will see you next time.